How's everyone doing here? Okay? Okay, let's start. Let me begin by admitting that I think that this shiur for me personally is a work in progress, and I'm sure that I will tremendously benefit from our having a discussion on this issue. And let me also begin by saying the last three pages of the handout are just Sfarim that I'm sure that you're aware of, but just in case there's one person in this room that isn't, they're important Sfarim for you to have. And whatever career path you take, to paraphrase the president, whether it's clay or Lake Kodesh. Okay? So you have the books by Ellenson, which is a three-volume series. You have a very important... Well, I'm sorry? You guys are familiar with it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. You have a book by Shmuel Katz called Kedoshim Tiyu. Any of you familiar with that one? Mm-hmm. And... some of you are. And then an issue of Jewish Women and Hair Covering, which just came out just past year and a half or so, by Lynn Schreiber, which is also a nice book. It has all different approaches to the notion of hair covering. It's a collection of essays. Not really halachic. There's one essay that's halachic, which I actually read, but it's really nice pieces because it's about women who struggled about covering their hair and came to certain conclusions of a positive light regarding that. And I think that sometimes in some of these issues, and here we're defining tzniut in a broad perspective, I think that you have the opportunity to sometimes, when women hear some of the issues of tzniut from other women, it's much more effective than when they hear it from rabbis. So let's begin by... Yeah, please. Let's begin by just starting with a very famous story, and if in and of itself is an important story. I think it casts a certain light on what we need to, on this whole notion of tzniut in general. Tanya, page 1. Amar Rav Nathan. Ein lecha kol mitzvah kala shekutu v'torah she'ein matan schar ba'om hazeh u'om haba eini yodeya kama kama. In other words, I assume that I don't have to translate here. Okay? Say lomad me mitzvot tzitzit. Ma'ishka b'adam achas, shahayezoher b'mitzvot tzitzis. Alright? So this guy who was very careful about the mitzvot tzitzis. Shama, he heard, sheyesh zona b'karche hayam, shenoteles dalet meho zehuvim b'schara. He heard that there was this prostitute who takes 400 gold coins for schar, for having a night with her. Again, you'll excuse me, I'm not sure what the going rate is for a zona, but I would assume that 400 gold coins is more than the normal rate. Shigerla arba amos arba meos zehuvim b'kavalozman. He sent her the money, and they set up a time. Kishigiyaz mano, when the time came, ba v'yashav al pesach, he came and he knocked on the door. Nichnasa shivchasa v'amrla. Her maidservant came out and said, "Oto adam shishigir lach dawad meos zehuvim ba v'yashav al pesach." The person who gave you the 400 gold coins, he's here, and he's waiting by the door. Amrahi yikanes and nichnas. And what happened was that basically he's communicating through the maidservant, and he is welcomed in. So the first thing that, and you'll see why I put this in here, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but you'll see why I put this in here. The first thing that happens is you have a guy who's obviously Zahir in Mitzvah Sittis, which is supposed to represent the Lo Sasurach Le'Levalchem Rechrei Necham issue. Obviously, it's a little bit robotic. And what's happening is that he hears about a prostitute who doesn't live in his city, therefore there's no downside. No one's going to find out about this. He sends 400 gold coins, sets up a time, and the first thing that happens is there's no personal relationship here. I'm cutting out the dialogue that I would normally have when I would do a story like story of a Gemara like this, that would have the people around the room tease out the issues. I'm just telling you the end issues. And the bottom line is, the Gemara is it's a beautiful story, a very important story in the Gemara. The Gemara is setting up a paradigm in which you have this guy, there's no dialogue between them. Hitzia lo zayin mitos, he walks into the room, he sees seven beds. Sheishol kesef va'achas shol zahav, six of silver and one of gold. Ubein kol achas va'achas sulam shol kesef elyona shol zahav. And between all of them, there is a ladder of silver, and the top and the Elyona Shazav, and the top one is gold. So first of all, what's happening here is the use of seven. Seven in Judaism represents something holy, Shabbos, the natural order of seven weeks between Pesach and Shavuos, the physical and spiritual redemption of Jewish people. Seven is something holy. But is this act holy itself? No, this act is totally immodest. Two people having a relationship in which they don't know each other's name, they don't talk to each other, there's no direct communication. The use of seven, which normally represents something holy, is now being used for something very profane. And then what happens is like this. Olsa v'yashva agave elyona kishihi aruma. She's laying down on the top bed. Vafu ala leishev erom kenegdan. He is about to get naked and also climb the stairways, so to say, and sit on the seventh bed. And as he's taking off his clothing, ba'u dalad tzitziyotav v'tavchulo alpanav nishmat v'yashavu agabre karka. A tzitzis hit him in the face as he's ripping him off. And what happens is he sits on the floor. Sitting on the floor in Judaism represents the notion of avelus, mourning, a moment of self-reflection, introspection. Something's happened in my life. I need to reflect upon it. I need to act upon it. And that's exactly what he's doing here. He is going through a process of redesigning his life. Look where he has gone to, and where the act of sexuality has become an act which is basically, you'll excuse me for being so direct here, genital meeting genital and not two personalities interacting with each other. She sees this. She's normally received 400 gold coins for this. She's not used to being rejected like this. She comes maybe with a guarantee of some sort. Va'afi nishmata v'yashva agar bekarka. So she too comes down from the beds and sits on the ground. Amralo, Gafa Shol Romi, She'eni Manchiyoscha Ad She'tomar Li Mamum Re'isi Bi. She says, in the name of the gods of Rome, I won't leave you alone until you tell me what flaw you saw in me that you didn't want to consummate the deal, so to say. So, this is the first time that they're talking to each other. The first time they're talking to each other is when they're getting to know each other. Amrala, he says, Amarla, he says to her, in the name of God, of Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shelo re'isi isha yafeh kemotach, I've never seen a woman as pretty as you. Ela mitzvah achas, sivani Hashem alkeini, v'tzitzis shema, God commanded one commandment, that tzitzis, and it says, ani Hashem alkechem shtei pamim, ani hu sha'asid lipar, ve'ani hu sha'asid l'shem schar, achshav nidmu alai kedalad edim. So that's it. He explains why. Amrlo, she says, okay, but I'm not going to leave you alone until you tell me what your name is, what your city is, what the name of your Rebbe is, where you sit and learn. And what happens is, he does not just tell it to her verbally, kasav and natan biyada. He writes it and gives it to her in her hand. Again, the language here of natan biyada, it's something more concrete than just a communication. The relationship here between these two strangers, and this is the first time they're talking to each other, becomes something stronger. Amda, she gets up. V'chilka kol nechaseha, she divides up all of her wealth. Shlish l'malchus, she gives a third to the government. Shlish l'aniyim, a third to the poor. V'shlish natla b'yadan, a third for herself. However, she sells everything except for the bed sheets that they were supposed to have this encounter. Chutz ma'otam matzaot. Ubat lebeit midrasho she Rabbi Chi. She comes to the Beit Medrash Rav Chi. While Rav Chi, Zuz here, do your own research on issues of, on Rav Chi's personality through Shas. Amralo, he says to him, Rebbe, tziva alai v'yasuni giores. I want to convert. And then she says, you know, maybe you want to convert for the wrong reasons. He takes out the paper. She takes out the paper, shows it to him, and he agrees to teach her. And what happens is she converts, and the bed sheets that she almost used for this inappropriate relationship is now used to celebrate their marriage together. So the first question that everybody should be asking is why in the world would I introduce this Gemara when I have a whole bunch of pages of sources that I would like to go through? Because I think it's important for us to realize a very important concept with the notion of tznius. The notion of tznius does not mean to be prudish. That's not the notion of tznius in Judaism. The notion of tznius is that relations between husband and wife, relations between males and females, men and women, are relationships that we hold dear, are relationships that we think are kodesh. Assuming that the Ramban wrote the Igeres HaKodesh, there is a very, you know, important document in which the Ramban reminds us about the mitzvah of how one has relations between husband and wife. And there's a plethora of other halachic machshava literature that's been written from the time of the Rishonim and forward that celebrate this idea. So it's important that when we discuss the notion of tznius, that we recognize that it's not that the Torah is suggesting that the definition of tznius, the way we carry ourselves, the way we clothe ourselves, the way we interact between the two sexes, is something that represents an approach in which we're trying to be prudish from the perspective that we don't believe that there is an appropriate venue for having a intimacy between man and woman. It's not coincidental that when the Gemara discusses this story, that the only thing she doesn't sell are the bed sheets. It's not coincidental that Gemara uses the seven, because what happens here is she transforms the seven from being used in a profane way to be used in a holy way. And these bed sheets that were going to be used in a way that would have compromised the laws of tzniut, that's the antithesis of the laws of tzniut, are now being used as a medium that celebrates tznius because of the relationship that is being concretized as husband and wife. You will, in the rabbinate, have a host of different venues in which you'll have to deal with issues of tznius. You'll have to deal with issues of tznius of how people walk into shul. You'll have to deal with issues of tznius of how people walk into schools. You'll have to deal with issues of tznius and how you interact and meet people in your offices. You'll have to deal with issues of tznius about the role of women in governance. You'll have to deal with issues of tznius when there is a woman who is crying in front of you and has told you that her husband has been cheating on somebody, and you know this husband and wife for a long time, or a woman who comes and tells you that my husband just announced to me that he's really gay, and I thought that if he went to a certain yeshiva, which could be fill in the blank, because there is no yeshiva that hasn't had that challenge with an alumna, with one of their alumnus, that I thought that the person would not be gay. Now I have a few children, and I need to deal with the issue. And there will be a moment, because you know this family, that you're going to be tested and challenged about whether you walk over to this woman who's crying and sobbing in your office, and you give her a hug to tell her everything is okay, or you remind yourself about the halachas of tznius. Those moments will happen. And ein apitrachus la'arayas. As much as you think that I'm probably speaking from a different worldview, I guarantee you that if you create relationships with people, which please God you will, by definition that represents success in the rabbinate or in education, these experiences will happen. And it's important for you to realize that in many ways the role of tznius is to remind yourself of the appropriate boundaries and guidelines that rabbis, educators need to have in whatever constituency they're dealing with, whether it's on the college campus, whether it's high school, whether it's the rabbinate with families, or desperate spouses who are going through difficult challenges. I think that in trying to understand my job here today, I think it's important that we recognize that halakha recognizes, and I think this paradigm is found throughout halakha, and I'm going to try to show this in a whole bunch of different ways, that there's two, and we'll discuss it, that there's two notions of tznius, of modesty, and issues of that nature within halakha. One is an objective boundary. There are clearly issues that are objective, that there are certain things that you cannot tolerate. There are certain protocols regarding dress and certain parts of one's body that should not be exposed. No matter where you live, whether you live in a cold climate or warm climate, whether you live in an environment in which people feel more lax, there's just basically certain standards that should not be compromised. And then there's also recognition, I believe, within halakha, and I'm not sure that this is found in too many other venues within halakha, in which there is also a notion of subjective arayas, or subjective issues of tznius, that there are certain formalities of tznius that are important and need to be created, or quite honestly can be looked away from, depending on the community that you live in and depending on what's accepted. My daughter does not wear stockings on a regular basis. She doesn't need to. She wears appropriate sleeve lengths, dress lengths, stuff like that. But if she walked in certain communities, whether in Borough Park or whether in Meir Shearim or a whole bunch of other places, the need for her to wear more, stockings may be a halachically mandated thing, perhaps because that is the malbush of the place. I don't think, and then we're going to go inside. I remember once I was doing a Federation mission to Israel. We did this mission and we had a reunion. And my wife came to the last 2 days of the mission, and then we spent some time in Israel alone. And she came to this reunion that we had. At this reunion, this woman comes over to me. She says, "Oh, the rabbi's here." And she runs and she gives me this big kiss. I turned red is an understatement of understatements. I've never been kissed by anyone but my mother and my wife, my kids. But it's obviously, I think that there, the issue of any form of embrace with another woman, I think, is not appropriate. However, the handshake, definitely in my opinion, and we'll discuss it a little bit more, is something that does work. And the point being that there is some notion of subjectivity within the notion of arayas, within the notion of tznius, a better way of forming it, that there is not, as well as some objective components within the notion of tznius. Okay? You will find rabbanim that have no problems hugging and kissing from Rabbanim, that have no problems hugging and kissing women, I quite honestly don't understand it. I don't think it's good policy for a host of different reasons. And both from halachic as well as from a practical in the society that we live in. Let's go through some of the halachas and then we'll get to some of the issues in a more concrete way. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvot, how long do I have? That's about 2:30. 2:40. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvot writes the following. The mitzvah is, the mitzvah lo sase, shinun gimel, he writes, and he quantifies in many ways that there are essentially two issues of tznius that one needs to worry about. He writes that one has to not have, that there is an issue of arayas, afilu below bia, even without having a sexual encounter. Kegon chibuk, v'neshika, udoma lahem, mipulot hasnus. And he goes on and he develops this. V'hu amru yisaleh b'hazhara mizeh, ish ish okosh er b'saro, lo sikrivu legalot erva, kilo yomar lo sikrivu mehem, kiruv yavi legalot erva. V'loshon the sifra, he says, lo sikrivu legalot, en li elo shalo yigala, menayim shalo yikarev, Talmud Lomar ve'elisha b'nidas tumasa lo sikrav, en li elo b'nida, b'altikarev, b'altikale, menayim l'chol arayas, Shehem, Bibati Krivu, Bati Glu, Tamalomar, Psukim that discusses these issues at the end of Achrei Mos, Lo Sikrivu, Legalos Erva, Shara Hema Zimahi. Bisham Amru, Nichrasu and Nifashot Haasot. So the Rambam says, what's this reminding you? That essentially there's two issues here. There's the issue of there's a halacha of tznius that applies, that any form of chibuk or nishuk are things that are part of the prohibition, as well as the issue of, obviously, a sexual encounter, which is obvious to everybody, but that's part of the prohibition. So you have the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos that basically defines tznius these issues in a twofold way. The Ramban, on the other hand, disagrees. The Ramban on page 2 says, "V'hinei harav matzah b'raisa hazu hamufureshet v'tala dvarav b'ilan gadol, aval kfi ha'iyun b'tamud ein davarkein shiyeh b'krivash ein ba gilui erva kigon chibuk v'nishuk lav umalkos." He does not agree, the Ramban, that the issues of chibuk and nishuk are in themselves prohibited d'araisa, but rather they're derabanans for the concern is that they may lead to something inappropriate, an encounter that's inappropriate. And the issue here, the reason why I bring this is that you see two different paradigms already shaping up about the issues of chibuk and nishuk. How is one supposed to deal with those issues? Are they considered inherently a prohibition, or are they just a prohibition because what they may lead to? And the Ramban proves his point, and that's you have in front of you in very clear ways how he uses a whole bunch of Gemaras that in which if somebody has the proper mindset where chibuk and nishuk will not lead to anything inappropriate, we see that the people are not condemned when they do things. And then if you turn to page 3, he says the same thing. This whole thing is basically the Ramban defending that the Rambam's understanding that chibuk and nishuk in itself is part of the issa d'oraisa is something that he's not willing to accept. The Shach in Yoredeya says that even the Rambam has limits, that the pu'ula has to be derechiba. And the Shach mentions this machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Hadar Mina b'shas, ma'ase ba'adam echad shenasan einav b'isha achas ve'elo libo tina v'amru arfoim ein lo takana ad shetiba'el lo, amru chachami yamus v'al tiba'el v'al tiba'el lo, tamod lefanav aruma yamus v'al tamod lefanav aruma tisaper imam mecharaya gedeh yamus v'vanei shedverim a'elu Einam gila rayas mamash elosh over behem below sikravula galos erva shulav the gila rayas And then Lefize Mashbet Tfirle Karambam in his Minyan HaMitzvos, Besefer Minyan HaMitzvos, Mitzvah Shenu Gimo, Shekasa Vizel Lashono, Hizra Kasa Makarev El Echad Marayas, Vafibu Lo Bia Kago Chibuk Benishav. Udomel Hem Min Apulot Hazarot, Behu Amru, Behazara Mizeh, Yishish HaKosha Erbis Velo Lusikru Begalos Erva. Kav Kasa Vasmag, Lavan Kav Chavav, Vakav Kasa Hara'a, Besefer Chinuch, Mitzvah Kav Pechet, Vakasa Torah Belavim, Shinchapes, Ava Ramban, Vasagot Shelo, Al Sefer Minyan Mitzvos, Chilek Al Rambam, Va'omer, she'ein malkim in a Torah el via Gemura, o bara'a, ayin sham, she'herich, she'herich, v'arav, v'arav Isaac di Leon, the Besefer, Megillas Esther, shelo, daf kuf yudchet, satar kod v'arav haramban, v'helach karambam. Now here's the piece. So this just brings down what I already told you, the two lines underlined, and we call makom mashma the af harambam, lo ka'omer, elo kisha'osa, chibu genishuk, derech chiba spia, sharei matzina v'shas, that there were those individuals that did chibuk and nishuk, and not derech chivas bia, and it was not frowned upon. So the Shach tries to indicate that even in the Rambam, that there is some limitations to it being a biblical prohibition. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a whole discussion here, where Rav Moshe Feinstein, if we turn to the next page, uses two different explains that there are two different Yisurim. B'nei Shnei Inyanei Yisur Hir Her Yesh Ha'echad Mikra V'Nishmarta Mikol Dovar Ra Mitzuvah Staf Men Vav She'isa Shem Mikan Amra Pinzlas Ben Yahar Al Yareh Adam B'yom V'yavol Yidi Tumah B'layla She'isur Zeh Hu'af Yishto She'imu Teres Lo V'chein Masha Asur V'staka V'isha Nida Fiyo Penuya V'isis Ish etc. The Rambam's the Rav Moshe Feinstein says Zeh Machmas Zeh eno machmas shehirer lasos avera ima or the avshalola hara lasos avera machmas zeh asum mishum shezeh mevi lidei tumas keri sheatzalosi levatala vasheni mikra the akrei einechin the derish bebrachas daf yudbet zerah hora avera eno mishas chashashas hotzas zerah levatala elohu isur milahaher lasos havera desnus kamo darish ma'achrei levavchem hirur alzeh dehu laavor isur that the Torah has forbidden. So here basically what's happening here is that Rav Moshe Feinstein is trying to indicate that there are two different concerns here. Concern number one is the Nishmarta Midavar Ra, that you shouldn't have Yihurim that might lead you to something, and that there's also another Isser, that simply having that mindset is of a concern. Rav Moshe Feinstein then asks the following question on bottom of page 5. Can you go in subways and buses where people are going to go to work and they're going to rub against women and they're going to be over Isser Nagia and things of that nature? Is that a problem? And Rav Moshe comes to the conclusion that it's not a problem because it's not being done the derech, in a derech chiva type of way. Page 7. Al kolpanim, v'dina b'nashim acheras, afes eshizis v'nidos v'nachrios, leke yisr shlo v'derech ta'ava l'choli amal, l'chein lo shayach, l'chush meleches v'subway u'b'bas v'shas alich l'avoda sh'dochakim v'duchufim anashim v'nashim af shlo yuchal yizahar v'negia v'dechipa v'nashim. De'hanegia v'lo muskavim machma sh'yev shalo yizahar ein zeh derech ta'ava v'chiba. V'im holech sham gam im yishto nida v'yeh v'ofen shlo yev shalo yizahar v'negava. If it happens, you know, again, you should try not to have that happen because there you know the woman and there, you know, there's other concerns, but he's not concerned about it. What the purpose that I'm bringing this is that that even Rav Moshe Feinstein in discussing these issues is indicating, and I think that you see this pervasively through all the poskim, that there is this notion of recognition of the fact that there are two components within laws of tznius. No matter where society goes, there's certain protocols of tznius that need to be kept. We haven't gotten into, and we're not going to get into great depth about dress issues per se, but there are two paradigms that all of these halakhas work with: the subjective erva and objective erva, subjective concerns and objective concerns. And here you see a subjective and objective concern being worked in a fashion in which you have Rav Moshe reminding us, and as well as the machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban, that perhaps the issues of negiyah and things of chibuk and nishuk are perhaps not isuri daraisa, but there are concerns or isuri derabanan because of what they may lead to. And others saying no, that they are by definition asur in their own right, because the concern is not only the act, an actual inappropriate act of intimacy, but any form of interaction that any form of interaction. The Rambam still makes a difference himself. And this point is highlighted by the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, page 8. Kol hava al erva min arayas derech evar, o shechavak v'nishek derech taiva v'nana v'kiruv basar, hareza loka min haTorah, shenemar levulti asos mechukos ha-teivos, v'nemar lo sikruvu legalos erva, kolama lo sikruvu ledvarim ha-mivi'in lidei gilui erva. Any type of chivuk and nishuk is considered something that is prohibited because of the fact that it, because of its own right, it has concern. Then the Rambam, however, says halacha gimel, v'advarim ha'elu asurim b'chay ve'lavim. However, he reminds you again, this is a different mindset. Umutul l'stakel b'pnei apnuya. Ulabatcha ben betula ben beula kidei shiyira im hi naa be einav shiyisena be ein bazetzad iser velo od el shiroi lasos kain avelo yistakel derech znus. In other words, there's a mindset here that the Rambam's playing off, that you have to understand what your machshava is. If you're dating somebody and you're looking towards a situation in which you want to marry the person, so then it's permitted to look if the person is matin to you, if the person's appropriate, if you will feel a certain compatibility, not only emotionally, but also from a physical perspective. So the Rambam permits that. And I think that this, again, reminds us of the fact that what counts in many of these issues is exactly the mindset that one is embracing at the moment that one is dealing with these issues. If you turn to the next page, page 9, the Rambam still reminds us, "Hamachabek echad naraya she'ein libo she'adam nokfo lehem o she'nashak la'acha mehem gona chosa gdola v'achos imo v'chiyotz behem afo pi she'ein shom taifa v'lo ona klau harezim maguna b'yose v'dava asar hu umase tipshim hu she'em krivim l'erva klau ben gdola v'gitana chutz me'ein levna v'av l'bito." So the bottom line is, the Rambam still reminds us that we have to be careful in any type of embrace, and recognizing the fact that even if one suggests that there's no taiva here, it's still considered at times an inappropriate action, even if it's someone that one's related to, like you're, and it would seem that there would be no interest, there's no hihuri avera here, still there are times in which that's forbidden. The Shulchan Aruch brings down the idea that it reminds us about the inappropriateness of interacting with other women. Also, lihishtamish beisha klal ben gedola ben gutana ben meshivcha ben meshuchereres shema yavod with a hirur avera, and then it speaks about what's forbidden. But then he goes on and he writes at the end, v'yesh omrim the chosha eino osa derechiva rak havanasa l'shem shemayim, which is language that he picks up from Tosfos. Mutter l'chaynagu l'haka b'tvarim e'elu yesh omrim de'en linhog afilo in ishto b'tvarim sho afilo in ishto b'tvarim sho chiba. So the Shulchan Aruch, again, my point of bringing all of these down is to remind us that, again, the Shulchan Aruch recognizes that there is a dea that suggests that even if an act of touching, which would normally be forbidden because of the iser of negiyah, the iser of any form of chibuk or nishuk, but if it's for reasons that have nothing to do with any type of overview of a hihuri avera, for example, the woman is a doctor or things of that nature, it's not forbidden, because kavanah solishim shemayim, because there is a different mindset, a different interest, a different issue there. Yes.
Could kavanah solishim shemayim mean not necessarily just any type of, you know, not chila, but specifically Tzemer Mitzvah? Or is that
no, that's not the way Tosfos in his language is talking about. He speaks about the idea of having interactions which maybe in the past were not permitted, but having them because in that case, or in that situation that Tosfos brings down, look at that Tosfos, Kavanas Lo L'Shem Shemayim means that they were doing it without the concern for Hihuri Avera. Yes? What do you think they're talking about here? What? It means to use a woman to perform certain procedures. Okay? Right? To wash your hands or face and things of that nature. Afila liptok bo mayim lirachot panav yar raglav afila ino negaspo. I assume that we're talking about here rechitzas panav yar raglav, that there is some type of physical touching.
He says afila bo
negaspo. Right. What?
He says afila ino negaspo.
Well, because what he's trying to say is it's better not to use them at all. He's saying that you shouldn't use there. It's saying us or you shouldn't use a woman for any of these things. Even if they're not going to touch, because it's an environment that has overtones that are not consistent with the laws of tznius. At the end, he says, but if it is in an environment in which you're not concerned about those things, because the mindset is different, a woman is your surgeon, right, and things of that nature, then you don't have to worry about that. L'shem Shemayim. That's what he's saying there. That's what Shulchan Aruch says.
Could theoretically agree with that.
That what?
Yeah, Nogaspo, of course, is Aser, but then he's telling you that even not
Nogaspo,
and then the modification
of
the Yesh
Omer
is only on the
Ainer Nogaspo. Well, he says, the Yesh Makilim, the Chol Eile. The Lo Aser, which Varim Shochiva, Rak Nishto Nita. The Yesh Omer, the Chol Zeh, Ainer Aser, Rak Makom Yichud, Abu Makom Shiro, B'nei Adam Mitzuyim, Kigom B'merchat, Mutil Rechot Me'avodot, Kechavim, Shpachot, The context of this thing is not on one particular thing, because the context is b'chol eila. Read the thing, it says b'chol eila. And therefore b'chol eila is about all of them. Yes?
Also, I'm not sure about the first reference, but it's also, I think, pretty much similar to the last Ritva in Kedushin, that as all Kavanah Shemayim is pretty, it's much more from the Ritva that it's talking about touching also.
Right.
But in the end, the Ritva also says that really, we shouldn't be making on this. Only a gadol shevedorah.
Right. But my point, listen, I believe very strongly in the fact that, and we're going to get to this, we're going to go through some other examples. I think that it's very important that a person who is playing a role as Klei Kodesh has to be very zahir on the issues of tznius. That means the following. From these sources, we could argue that maybe a woman can cut your hair, get a haircut from a woman. I don't see how, I think that that's wrong to do. I don't think that I can tell you that halakhically, I can prove to you 100% that's wrong. It's in a public area, you know, and things of that nature. But I don't think it feels right. I think that there's a level of tznius. Now, it might not be that anyone in this room ever had a havamina to have a haircut by a woman, but it's things of that nature that I don't think are appropriate. I don't think it's appropriate that a rabbi ever meet with a woman alone, assuming that even by meeting with a woman alone, you can obviate issues of yichud. I still don't think it's important. I think it's important that rabbis have windows in their offices, but yet have privacy. I think there are ways in which you can do both. You can, you know, there have been times in which I've met with a woman and it had to be alone, in which I've asked my secretary to sit in on the meeting. People know that my secretary knows what's going on. Especially when there were teenage girls that had certain crises. And it wasn't because I was afraid of what I would be accused of doing. God forbid. It was because I just think you have to hold yourself to a higher standard on all issues of tznius. I just think that that's the way you can be effective. And And I'm talking from a rabbi who wasn't a rabbi in Borough Park, who had the luxury, you know, I'm talking from a guy who basically, you know, was in the community that the vast majority of the people he interacted with were not, at least initially, Shomer Shabbos, or understood these laws, or thought that I was from Mars, whatever. But the bottom line is, I really do think it's a very important paradigm for all of us to keep regarding the way we interact. The laws of tznius are extremely important that we be machbed on, first of all, for ourselves. The piece that I think is also important to realize is the laws of tznius have some leeway to them in regarding certain public policy issues. Do you require everybody in the every woman in the shul to cover their hair when they walk into the shul? So, you know, everybody has those cake doilies, you know, whatever else, and those things of that nature. Well, let's be honest, most people don't use them. You know, do you have a woman usher who walks around and basically gives women things to put on their head? Now, I have to tell you that in my own life, in my own rabbinic career, I went through different challenges in this area. Like, women would come in with sleeveless, especially at a bar mitzvah, which the family wasn't from. That I felt was a form, that I think is a form of tznius, erva, whatever, how you want to put them, that is inappropriate. And we had different size sweaters that were very nice. And there was one woman who was an usher, would walk around and say, would you put this on? And I rehearsed the language because I didn't want to turn somebody off because of it. But I wasn't machben on making sure every woman covered their hair because of the tshuva of Moshe Feinstein that we'll see in a few minutes. When we built the machitza is glass, but if you look at the machitza, which Rav Schechter helped design, the glass does not begin, the glass begins at a point where a normal-sized woman standing, it's basically a good part of her body would still be covered. Because I didn't want to have to worry that women may wear skirts that are longer or shorter, and it might create, you know, some challenges regarding issues of davening there. I think it's the challenge is to be sensitive to everybody's needs and recognize that people who are not sanua for the most part are just people who just don't know better, who live in a society in which that's not the it's not the thing. You know, there's a commercial on television, I remember many years ago, about a mother who dresses, the girl is about to leave for school. She's wearing this dress, and the dress is like right over here, and the mother goes, "You can't go to school like that. You see, it's short." And you know, you intuitively think she's saying, you know, the dress is too short. She walks over to the kid, and she pulls the dress a little bit down so that there is a certain exposure between the top and the dress. Now you're ready to go to school, and it's, you know, the name of the dress company, whatever else. My point is that we live in a society in which that's the norm, and it's and I do believe that issues of anorexia and other issues that you see within the Jewish community and in the secular community are directly connected to people having low self-esteem. Because we define a person based on issues of their ability to fit into certain type of dresses, their size, you know, the way they carry themselves from a physical perspective. And I think the halachas of tznius, at least the way they've always resonated for me, especially that first story, has always reminded me that the Torah is not looking for that type of paradigm, that we define ourselves by our physicality as much as we define ourselves by our own essence. And I think that in communities in which there is a focus on, this is from the Beis Yaakov to the co-ed high schools, where there is this focus on dress sizes, and you know, don't eat too much because you're going to go to your seminary in Israel and you're going to eat a lot of bread there, so you're going to gain a few pounds. So before you go to the seminary, make sure you're a size, whatever the sizes are. I think that that's why the Jewish community has 55% of the beds in anorexia clinics around the country, And in case you didn't know it, we don't represent 55% of the population of the American community. I think that there are issues there, and I think that SNEAS is a way in which we deal with some of those challenges, and that we create a paradigm of what's appropriate in SNEAS. And I think Halakha has certain basic core values and a recognition that some of the values of SNEAS are influenced by society. And that's what I'm trying to show. Yes? So you have a question? Okay. Yes?
Just a quick practical question. As far as the concept of their people, what is exactly the government that I don't want to, this is a larger discussion, I don't want to carry you too far afield, but is their people any kind of emotional interaction? Meaning, for example, the case you presented at the beginning of the class where the woman...
I'm sure she wasn't over any usur when she did it, and I'm... No, I wasn't. But the bottom line is that it's. I think that the way a Ben Torah has to carry themselves is that there are certain types of embraces, no pun intended, but there's certain types of embraces that are simply outside the pale of what you do. You're not going to be able, again, I don't want to say absolute terms because who am I to define what people are going to be able to do or not do? I personally don't think that there's something wrong with the fact that if a woman extends her hand for a rabbi to take it. I don't think it's derechiba. I think it's standard operating protocols and procedures. I think it's, it follows this tosvos of, derech ne'anah. There's actually, I think, a Levush that speaks about it. Did you want to say something?
Yeah,
Levush that speaks about it. There's others. I don't think there's anything wrong with something like that. I think that people think that that's a regular way to just embrace, but I think that, and I would, and one could argue that the reason why that you can hug, a person could hug is maybe it's not derechiba. I just think that there are certain types of embraces and certain types of expressions that should be reserved for certain types of relationships, and I think when a rabbi shows a person that it's okay to embrace me during your time of need and hug me, and maybe in the short term that rabbi gained some brownie points by showing how open and tolerant he is, at the end of the day, I think it leads to a slippery slope that's too dangerous, at least for me, to be comfortable accepting. Okay, yes.
For the Sephardim, who Rambam, Machaber, who don't hold by the Tosfos, is there any actual Asa or a line to say when a woman does stick out her hand and you have to...
I'm not sure. First of all, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not sure that even amongst the Sephardim, since the Rambam himself has limitations on it, where he, as I showed in Hilchos Asuri Via, that would be an issue. I think that
you don't care. It's that's definitely not there. People already said Sabra Asar, Egyptian. Also, Rav Avadia brings there's a story of Rav Avadia. I'm sure if you know that he got a Nobel Prize something from Golda Meir.
Mm-hmm.
So from everybody, she puts out her hand to shake his hand and he doesn't bow.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to the question. I could research it, but I don't know the answer to that. Yes?
Yeah, you spoke about shaking hands. Two questions. First of all, why do they only say, like, if she extends her hand, then take it, but not be proactive? I mean, is there a reason for that, just not to show?
That's a good question. There have been times in which I've extended my hand. I don't normally do that because, again, I think that there's... I'm a pretty stickler... Personally, again, I'm not saying that people who don't do it are wrong. I just feel that there's a certain... I think we live in a society in which SNEAS is like... Has totally been abandoned. And I think when you are such a public personality, as rabbis are, it's extremely important that you create those appropriate barriers. I must tell you that every single day... I don't want you to think that it doesn't destroy my day, but there are definitely times in which I pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu one of the things that I'm always afraid of is that someone should ever, people who have given their lives to Avodas HaKodesh and who have never been inappropriate have been accused of doing inappropriate things. You know, one of the worst things that could ever happen to a person is if somebody suggests that they've done something inappropriate between a man and a woman. And there are these websites up there that basically take no prisoners on these issues. And some of it is our fault, because when we knew of cases where men, rabbinic personalities, were playing certain roles and we didn't act upon them fast enough, it forced that fringe to become more emboldened. But I think it's important to recognize the fact that, you know, your whole career in any form of Avodas HaKodesh can be compromised when one does not really realize how important it is to create these, I think, appropriate boundaries and limitations. Yes?
You mentioned the situation where the woman is in crisis and seeking ground points by hugging her. I don't think that's where she's probably going to be coming from. She probably wants to know what's up with the human being.
That's a very good point.
You can alienate her from a lot of different other things by not reaching out to her.
Your point is well taken. I think I'll answer it in two ways. The point is very well taken, especially because as we go through more of these sources, we'll see that it's not so clear that it's inappropriate, it's forbidden to do that, as I think we've already demonstrated. So that's why, for me, this is a very hard class to give, because barring any source here that one can read this way, I think a rabbi, every time they interact with any experience, has to ask themselves, will that interaction empower me to help people that come to me in the future? And I think it's important that you create certain parameters that allows you to stay above any challenges so that you have a long career and that you can be effective. That's number one. I think that in our day and age, when there are mixed signals regarding any showing of physicality, that what may be viewed as the rabbi looking like a human being might be viewed by that woman in 4 months from now, when she gets over her being distraught, as something that the rabbi was inappropriate. And even if the rabbi did it totally l'shem shemayim, which I believe in the way you've enunciated is exactly what you meant also, it compromises his ability to be a facilitator in future situations. And every time you have an experience like that, you have to be careful. I remember times when people used to call me up and say, can you do this conversion? Can you sign on this conversion? The person wasn't fully embracing. Any time that I had a case in which there was a person who was living in the community already, I had a case a few weeks ago where the following thing happened. It was a woman who was adopted. She went to Stern College many, many years ago. She was date raped when she was in Stern College. She walked away from keeping Shabbos. She was about to get married. This happened since the last time we met. She was about to get married. And her father, the rabbi, called me up. The rabbi lives in Palm Beach. The rabbi called me up and said he needs to use the Boker Ton Synagogue mikvah, and he'd like me to be mitzarev to the basin. So I'm able to say, listen, you should call Rabbi Goldberg. I'm just the rabbi emeritus. You know, it's a great thing now. So Rabbi Goldberg obviously calls me up and says, yeah, I got this phone call from this rabbi, whatever. What do we do about this? I said, listen, she's not totally shomer mitzvahs. I said, and I feel how important it is to do this, but we have to call Rabbi Schachter and ask Rabbi Schachter if it's permitted to do this conversion or not. Actually, this first question happened over the summer, but the conversion happened since the last time we met. So Rabbi Schachter felt, for a whole bunch of different reasons, she's keeping all the other mitzvahs, she's committed to keeping Shabbos based on more kulas and issues of geiros, that there wasn't a problem to do this conversion with the understanding that she has to agree to accept certain, and make sure that she always keeps certain things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, why did she need a conversion? I forgot to say that piece. the piece I forgot to say was, she was adopted when she was a baby, and the conversion was done by the by conservative rabbis, and she was always grew up within a Jewish community setting. I'm sorry, that point was important point that I forgot. Sorry about that.
Let her into NYU.
Yeah, but that's another question. How they let her? Well, that's a different question. I plan to have that discussion a different time. But that's a different question. Yes, that is an important question to be whatever explored in a different venue. So the bottom with different people. So the bottom line is that the issue here is the following. It's a no-brainer. You want to help this woman for all the reasons that everybody's faced when I said that she was date raped from Stern College. She went whatever. Everybody in this room felt bad for her. But I've converted, I don't know, 40, 50 people. I want to make sure that every time I've done a convert, if the next conversion has to be as good as the first, or else I'm being moti laz on every other conversion that I've done. I think the same thing is true when you have any of these experiences. You have to really make sure that the environment that you create to deal with the horrific and jubilant experiences, life cycle experiences, that you will have the privilege and pleasure to interact in and help choreograph, you want to be able to create one that allows you in the future to be able to do it also. The second part of the answer to that question is, you have to work a little bit harder because you can't hug. You have to work a little bit harder. I truly believe that. And you have to spend a little bit more time, and you have to be, you know, on top of it a little bit more because you can't show it. And again, I'm speaking in ways that I've never spoken about this issue before. There is one or two cases that I remember that every piece of my body said, just give the woman a hug. And it's the emotional intuition. You know the person for 10 years. They're going through a crisis, which is you don't wish on your worst enemy, but I think at the end of the day, it's important to realize that you're never dealing just with one case. It's how you set up your rabbinate, your principalship, your teachership, whatever it is. And it's important that those be parameters that are not just defined by the moment, but really defined by a mental attitude that is consistent with where you want to be on the spectrum. That's the point that I think is important. Yes?
Can you just comment for a minute? You've spoken now about the rabbi's own personal behavior in terms of in Yonei Tzniyos being like a Nishuk. When a rabbi sees his own community being overly lax in this, what guidelines?
Right. Okay, good question. So the first thing is, the next sugya that we're going to do here, I think, highlights some of those issues. But just to mention them, and then let's go through them a little bit more. I think that a rabbi has to be very careful on this issue. And quite honestly, I think that there are times that I have bombed miserably on this issue. I'll give you one example. I was so frustrated with the informality of people and the way they walked into shul, especially on Shabbos. You know, people not wearing jackets, people not wearing ties, people coming in shirts that, you know, I wouldn't even take out the garbage in the middle of the night in. Women wearing dresses that I wouldn't let my daughter sleep in. You know, I was so turned off by this stuff that one day I printed up rules and regulations how to walk into shul, made them into big posters, and then put them up at every entrance to every part of the shul. And I have a lot of credibility in my community. Like, you know, I've done enough that I had like some chits in the bank. I got blown out of the water. I mean, like, I was walking around with I had like a target on me because I didn't properly deal with it. And I tried to move it from a lax situation to what I would like it to be in one moment. So I learned from that experience, and I realized that I had to deal with this in a few different ways. One way is that we made rules about how a shliach tzibur has to daven. That, by definition, set a certain standard for actually everybody else. And it really was a little bit more focused. Two is, we created rules and regulations of how you walk into the day school. Because by defining how you walk into any makom kodesh, not just on Shabbos, you created certain expectations. So in other words, if a woman was about to work out at a workout place and she wore these spandex pants and things of that nature, she needed to keep a skirt in her trunk before she walked into the day school, because there were certain expectations of how you dress in a Makom Kodesh. Then the other thing is, I had mental health professionals speak about issues of self-esteem and self-worth, and how we train our children to define what that is based on the clothing they wear, and how it's important that if you pay for the kids' clothing, you might as well shop with them and understand what they're buying. And then there were groups of discussions I had, and quite honestly, I know of one couple that decided not to move in the community because that Shabbos I gave a drasha on the halachic responsibility to cover your hair. And I never shied away, although I did it a little bit more tactfully than the way I articulated it, about and speaking about certain issues of tznius, but in a more focused way, speaking about hair covering from the pulpit. Because I think it is important that there be a certain understanding. Then I made certain rules, like for example, before we had an official mikveh lady, we trained a group of mikveh ladies by bringing Tehila Abramoff in for, I don't know how well she's known anymore, but at a certain time she was a major personality and issues of that stuff. The only people that could apply to be mikveh ladies were women who covered their hair all the time. Because there's a certain understanding that if you're going to be involved with that mitzvah, you got to wear the gear, so to say, the whole time. You got to wear the clothing, you got to wear the outfit. I think that it is, a rabbi cannot be shy about discussing these issues, but he has to do it in a smart way. And when he sees a woman not dressing properly, and Baruch Hashem, if he's blessed with a wife who has tact, then sometimes it's better for the wife to say something. And if he sees that there are people who just don't get it, either he has a meeting with those people privately, or he has to discuss the issues. And sometimes, you know, the greatest thing about a scholar in residence is, the greatest thing about a scholar in residence is, they might not know more than you, but the bottom line is Saturday night, they're leaving. So there have been many times in which I've used scholar in residence to take the bullets on these issues for me. And there's nothing wrong with that. They're getting paid for it. When Pesach Kron has come a number of times, and he's very excellent in these issues, I have asked, and I've met with him in advance to speak on these issues, and have given him bullet points of things that he must include in this topic. Because Pesach Kron leaves at Saturday night. They don't like him, so they won't buy his bris book. At the end of the day, I'm still safe, and I've accomplished all my goals. Those are tactics. I told you the one that I failed in, because I want you to realize, no one succeeds on these issues all the time. If you have like a 300, you know, if you're batting 300 on this, you're doing great. Right? You don't succeed all the time on these issues. You just have to try to move the base somewhere else. And then it's also about having appropriate role models. The more female role models that you can have that celebrate your agenda, the better off you are. Reuven Brand's mother-in-law is a teacher, is assistant principal of a school that we started, Orly Kanner. She's just this unbelievable role model. First of all, she speaks beautifully. She carries herself in a certain way. She can talk about issues that's near and be more successful in it in a 15-minute conversation than I would be in 15 hours. You gotta find people that can articulate those visions in ways that protect you but empower your agendas at the same time. That's what I think. Okay, let's turn to page 10 for a second. Let's go on. So here you start to deal with the issue of, and by the way, before we even go to there, I put in this handout in the back, two pages, page 18, which was a page from about exactly how we expect visitors to come to the school in a dress code. You'll see how it's written. It's written pretty nicely. Page 18. Page 19 is not from such a long time ago, about how we reminded people to walk into the day school, which had a much bigger problem than the high school. Page 19. And it spoke about, and I didn't cut and paste this. I just asked them to send me, I just asked for a copy of the newsletter that this was focused on. And this has been sent out, many times. And basically what it says is, our children are taught that there's the school's a Makom Torah. And basically, if you want it revered and respected, we expect your clothing to express that attitude. And clothing can reflect, a certain mindset. And therefore, in a very clear way, we expected them to dress a certain way. To this end, we ask parents to dress in keeping with guidelines outlined in the parents' manual. We understand that at times parents are coming from health clubs or some other activity may be dressed in sports clothes. At such times, we request that a wrap skirt be kept in the car for use upon entering the school. And if one is wearing a halter top, a sweater or sweatshirt should be worn. I mean, you don't get more graphic and, more direct than that. And, he didn't get killed for this one, which we wrote together, because we learned from the last time. But, those are the way you do it. We also have cards. Anytime someone's having a bar bat mitzvah, in which we think that the couple is bringing in people who don't understand the dress code, a very nice card was prepared that speak about how you should dress in a shul. Okay, let's go on page 10. So here we're introduced to the notion of Dat Yehudit and Dat Moshe. Dat Moshe being the notion of a biblical prohibition, and Dat Yehudit being a notion of a rabbinic prohibition. So the Mishnah discusses about Ho'overet al Dat Moshe v'Yehudit, Ve'ezuhi Dat Moshe. It goes through a few things, and Ve'ezuhi Dat Yehudit, Yotzah v'Rosha Parua. Speaks about walking with your hair. What the word parua means is a little bit unclear. We'll define it in its most halachic term, and that is uncovered. The Gemara then asks, how can you say that's just dat yehudit, for a married woman to walk around with uncovered hair? It's a daraisa issue to walk around with uncovered hair. As it says, ufara et rosha isha. So the Gemara says that there are two different components here. One component is some form of a covering, and the other component is a more extensive, or some type of that the hair maybe the hair is braided or covered in some limited fashion. And then the issue of Dat Yehudit is the responsibility of it being covered in a more significant way. The Rambam in Hilchos Ishus concretizes that in the following way. The Rambam Hilchos Ishus says that what is Dat Moshe that's forbidden? Dat Moshe that's forbidden. What's the biblical prohibition? Yotza b'shuk b'se'ar rosha galui. It's totally, uncovered, free-flowing. What's Dat Yehudit? And that is v'rosha parua, the bottom of page 10. V'ein ha'le'a redid k'chol anashim. Even though her hair might be covered in some way, or it's not free-flowing, but it doesn't have the same cover as all the women are wearing. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yud Zayin, Lo yelchu b'nas Yisrael purei rosh b'shuk achas panuya v'achas eshes ish. Here the Rambam writes, and here's where we get to, different definitions, where the Rambam writes that the hair covering of some form is both for married women as well as for women who are panuyas. Now we start going through a whole series of issues here. First of all, the Shulchan Aruch. First of all, the Shulchan Aruch mentions this whole idea of what Dat Yehudit is. Yotzah Dat Yehudit again being that rabbinic prohibition. Yotzah l'shuk olamavoy mefulush olbachotesha rabbe bokimbo v'roshah perua v'ein haleh redid k'chol nashin afol pisha sa'ara mechusa b'matzechot. Even if her hair is covered in some other way, but in this case where the roshah is perua, but in this case where it isn't a full hair covering, that's an iser of Dat Yehudit. Encyclopedia Talmudit explains Dat Moshe. What is Dat Moshe? Any mitzvah that is mentioned in the Torah. And the Encyclopedia Talmudit explains that if you turn to page 12, that the definition of Dat Moshe is when your hair is totally exposed, Purur Gamre, that's considered a prohibition of Dat Moshe, it's an Issa Daraita. And he explains, V'ach Echad Panuyos V'Echad Esus Ish V'Klau Ha'Isur, and then he brings down, which is mentioned by many, that the panuya that we're talking about here is not a regular panuya, although it's not everybody holds like this. It's a panuya that's already been married before, an almana, a grusha, but a betula, a woman who's never been married before, doesn't have to have any form of hair covering. We know that not every community holds like that. It's a machlokas within the Rishonim, if that's correct. And then the Encyclopedia Talmudit has the Dat Yehudit issue. Dat Yehudit is that the biblical prohibition is to have your hair totally exposed. The rabbinic prohibition is the need to have a full hair covering. The Chai Adam has this idea also. The Chai Adam follows the more conservative view on page 13, and that is the following, that whether you're a panuya or, you know, once you are of a certain age, you have to have your hair braided or covered in a certain fashion, braided. So we see that there is this issue of exactly what it means to cover your hair. We see that there is different approaches regarding the definition of covering your hair. And why covering your hair is so important in this discussion is for the following reason. First of all, as I think again, I don't think that this is a chiddush to anybody. What? I don't think it's a chiddush to anybody that the notion of covering your hair, that there are different approaches within the Rishonim. Some consider it a form of tzniut, to the point in which they will suggest that a shekel, peya nachrit, especially the Svardim, is not an appropriate way to cover your hair. Some will say that it's just an issue of erva, and therefore any covering of the erva is appropriate, whether it's a peya nachrit, or for that matter, even your own hair that has been cut and made into a shekel, although not everybody's comfortable with that. And then you have those that will suggest that covering the hair is a siman of nesuin, and therefore the siman of nesuin perhaps has to happen outside of the home, but maybe not inside the home. There's a whole vast difference of approaches regarding hair covering. I remember when I got married, I did not want my wife to wear a shekel. I just wanted to wear hair coverings. She wanted to wear a shetel, so we went to Rebbe Soloveitchik and asked him. Rebbe Soloveitchik told me that I'm not the one covering my hair, she is, and that she should wear any hair covering that she wants. He did not tell me that it's not mandatory to cover your hair. He did tell me that she has to cover her hair. How she wants to cover her hair should be her decision, and it should be something that I should, you know, basically butt out of. There are shitos, however, there are one or two shitos that might try to indicate that hair is a form of erva that is subjective, and therefore maybe you don't have to cover your hair right now. I'll show you. There's one shita I put in here like that. It's definitely by no stretch, but it's definitely not the norm in any way. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that bottom of page 13, Tefach Magula v'Isha v'Mokum Shadarka l'Chasoso Afilu Yishto Asa L'Kro Krishma Kenegda. Right, you shouldn't daven in front of her. But Malcolm Shadarka Lachaso. And then he goes on further, and he says that Seir Sho Ishto Shadarka Lachaso Asal Krokenegdo Afil Ishto Avo Basulo Shadarka Lelech Puros Harosh Mutar. Then you start seeing on the next page again, L'chasoto avo panev yodea kafi aminan shederech liyot magula ba'oto makom. You start seeing in this Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha that they introduce ideas that you should recognize that there are some subjectivity in certain halachas of tznius. And turn to page 15 for a second. Vada o dafilu im derech isha zu v'chavroteha v'oto mokom leleich v'gilu herosh v'shuk k'derech putzot asur k'mo le'inyen gilu shuka d'asur b'chol gavne. So the Mishnah Berurah is very clear that here is something that is considered a objective form of arayas, objective form of tznius, and therefore you cannot daven in front of them. However, for Basula, where we permit her to walk with her hair uncovered, that's not considered erva at that point, and therefore you're allowed to read in front of them. The Aruch HaShulchan, on the same issue, the most misquoted Aruch HaShulchan ever, writes the following. Everybody knows this Aruch HaShulchan. I don't know anything else the Aruch HaShulchan said, but this Aruch HaShulchan, everyone knows. Kasru Rabbeinu Balei HaShulchan Aruch, Pasuk Bet, Se'ar Shel Isha Shedarka L'Chasoto, Asa L'Kros K'Negdo Afilu Ishto, Avo Basulo Shedarkam Leich Peruos Harosh Mutar, Vu Adin HaSa'arot Shel Nashim Shagiyun Latzeit Chutz L'Tzimatam, V'Kosh Kein Se'ar Nechrit, Afilu Darka L'Chasoto, Akam L'Shano. V'Zesh Nisbar, Ben Eben Ezra Simichav Aleph, D'Gam Penuos Lo Yeichu V'Gilu Rosh, Zehu Beulos Kama Amanos Grushos Velo Besulos. Veyesh Mi Shekasav De Af Besula Lo Teirech Lo Teilech Tisha Sarotel Muturos Velo Kluos. Veyesh Omrin De Bechatzer Muturos Ko Anashim Gam Anasuos Leil Vigilu Rosh. This idea that in their chatzer is muteres, I always understood that to be because they're holding that the notion of covering your hair is a din in Nesuin, and the house defines you Nesuin at that point in time. Vayim ve'evan ezer simen kuf tetvav v'gzorad naso hizrem ma'od v'zeh v'nashim ha'ba'ot mimakomot she'ein darkam l'galotam l'makom she'darkam l'galotam v'ein datam l'gzor muteres l'galotam. They can follow where they're here. V'ata ba'u, and now let's discuss the issues about what's happened v'avasinu harabim, that in this generation women go with gila harosh v'chol mach tza'ak l'azeh hu lo la'zor v'lo lo yo. It hasn't worked. Women who are married walk around as if they're unmarried. Woes to us that this has happened in our day. He says, "Akopanim medina nireshu mutar lano l'tfala l'varech neged rishayim hamagulos kibin sha'ato ruban holchos kach v'havei kimakomos hamagulim v'gufa." Moshe Kasav Mordechai b'shem Ravya sof perek gimel v'zeh l'shono kol dvarim shuzkanu l'erva dafkar. So you hear you have the Aruch HaShulchan, where the Aruch HaShulchan says that if we're not worried about hear her because everybody is used to women walking around with their hair uncovered, it's not a prohibition to daven in front of them. That could be the same issue regarding women wearing pants, that if the pants are not tight, the parents are loose-fitting pants. Maybe the first generation of women who wore it violated some prohibition, but maybe the next generation of women. I don't think that a generation of women who wear pants now violate a prohibition if they're not tight pants, if they don't create hihurim. Not that it's something that I, you know, personally endorse for my own daughter, but just to be, you know, intellectually honest. But again, I think that here's the notion of subjective forms of tznius. In Eretz Yisrael, you'll go to these weddings in Eretz Yisrael, and they have these new get-ups where women will wear these long, they have a dress, and they'll also have pants as part of their dress, and their hair will be covered, etc., etc., etc. That might be acceptable in certain parts of Eretz Yisrael as something that is halachically permitted. I'm not sure, since I don't think that's been embraced, at least in the environments that I've seen, I'm not convinced that would be permitted in other environments in which that's not the norm. My point being that I think that there is clearly an issue regarding dress and everything else of that nature that has to be acceptable by a community for it to be considered halachically appropriate. The Yamshul Shlomo writes on page 16, that Ben Royalas, he speaks about this issue, and he says, Mutalo lahaska with big dates, bonum show isha, uladavar lasaka be'erva, b'shal b'shalom isha. You can ask, you can speak about how a woman is doing. You can talk, if you look at the Meiri also on in Pirkei Avos about the idea of speaking to women. And you'll see he speaks about this also. The next source is the Tosfos in Maseches Kedushin, where he says, Va'al zu anus somchim hashtash anu mishtamshim benashim, that we can use women to do certain things. You have the question by Rav Moshe Feinstein. In our day and age, the Mishnah says that a woman who doesn't cover her hair, she's violating Das Moshe, so therefore she can be you can force her to give her a ketubah, to divorce her without a ketubah. So Rav Moshe has asked the question whether in our day and age that still applies. Rav Moshe says it does not apply, indicating that not to suggest that it's permitted not to cover your hair, but indicating that in our generation, well, first of all, because we don't divorce Bar Kocho, but he says,
Im lo amra la kodom nis hakadushin shet tichase sa'ra lo hayachal lismach acheskas kashruta shet tichase se'ra v'havizeh ki yadav nitratze shayin shach klal ladun u lafsida ksuvasa.
This is also where Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses a problem that many shuls have, and that is, how do you daven in a shul where women are, unless they have mechitza ad l'shamayim, you know, that the mechitza is halachically permissible, but the women walk around with their hair uncovered, even in shul. And he says that it's permitted because, again, since we're used to it already, it's not. He's not trying to endorse it. Since we're used to it already, it's not considered a form of erva that one needs to be concerned about davening. Then you have a tangential thing that I wanted to mention. This is a commentary in the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot, Siad HaLevi, Rav Hurwitz. Excuse me, I cut it out at home and brought it here, so the last thing got cut off. But the bottom line is, it says like this, Kvar hutar davar afu neshe yisrak sheros v'tznuot umihu sheyarav libo ligmor dinam kaprutos uko overes uko overos al das dimken hanachas bas Avram Avinu Yoshevet Tachas Balev Achazonos Nasachotenu. He tries to prove from here that since the norm is not for women to cover their hair anymore, that perhaps halachically it's no longer a mandated responsibility. That's what he says. There's not too many more that suggest that. But, and again, in the spirit of being intellectually honest, I wanted to mention it. You have the Stechemet that discusses the issues of Pnuya that I brought down. It's really basically the same thing I just said. And let me just end, and then let me finish 2 minutes, and then we'll stop. I just want to, again, my goal of doing this was to show you that I think that halacha has two different forms throughout its discussion of issues of pnios and of erva, of subjective and objective erva. There are certain parts of the body that are never permitted to be revealed. There are certain other parts of the body that are permitted based on the culture of the times, or eventually based on the culture of the times. I think, however, that it is important to recognize that we, as future Rabbanim, future Mechanchim, B'nai Torah, have to be very careful on these issues of Tzniyus. Meetings, one cannot transgress the Yisurim of Yichud. They're there for good reasons. greater rabbanim than any one of us in this room have violated certain parameters because they thought they didn't have to keep the halakhas of yichud. We will have to deal with issues of lack of tznius. One of the things that Rabbi Schwartz mentioned about dealing with other issues, I want to mention one of the things that is mixed dancing. Not convinced that that's the same type of problem anywhere within the Orthodox community as it was 20 or 30 years ago, but it's clearly something that is, you know, halachically forbidden, because you're not just dancing with your own spouse. The rabbi, why can't I dance with my spouse? I've been married to her for 50 years. Let me dance with her. The answer is, there are several answers, but the most important answer is that at the end of the day, you're not going to finish dancing with your own spouse. I personally, again, and I'm not saying that one has to take this tactic, I was very strong on these issues of mixed dancing. I felt that there was it was a tznius, significant tznius issue, and when I came, the day school had dinner dances, which were mixed dancing, and I refused to participate. I refused to go to the day school's dinner, which was a non-starter for them, that I wouldn't be there. And so therefore, the first few years, we agreed that there wouldn't be separate dancing, God forbid. There would be no dancing, because they didn't want to totally give in. So basically, they made dinners in which there weren't bands, but they did other type of entertainment. And eventually, 4 or 5 years into it, they started hiring, you know, people who did simcha dancing, and now, at the last dinner, they actually put a mechitza down the middle of the dance floor. The guy walked over to me, who's been involved with establishing the day school for as many years as I had, and he reminded me, who would have ever thought that in this school, which 12 years ago you had to tell them that you were going to announce in the pulpit that you were not going to the dinner dance because it was mixed dancing, who would ever think that 12 years later they would put a mechitza down the middle? But you should realize that there are consequences for these things, and they're not, I don't believe that that it's the right thing. The synagogue has been compromised significantly because there is no caterer that's willing to be the caterer of the synagogue, because I will not allow mixed dancing at any event, even though there are tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein that permits it. Clear tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein that permit it when he deals with the issue of Messiah de'Avera and Sne'iver issues. Because I felt that once I start allowing mixed dancing in the social world of the synagogue, it's very hard to explain to people why you don't stay at their simchas when there's mixed dancing. Mixed dancing is, for me, my way of knowing it's time for me to leave. So what started happening in the culture of the people that would invite me to simchas, they would have the meal, they would dance in the meal, they would bench, and what would happen is they would serve dessert and have mixed dancing. That became the culture for a while. This way they could have their cake and eat it too, basically. But the bottom line is that I think it's important, and I think that when you stand for certain issues of this nature within your community, then I think you create paradigms. That this is not, when I went to a Federation event, if there was mixed dancing, I did not leave. When I went to an event that was not under Orthodox auspices, I did not leave because I could not expect them not to have. But I must tell you that 2 weeks ago, the Young Adult Division of the Federation had an event. Not only was it glatt kosher, but the entertainment was also glatt kosher. And I think that that's a step, because you have to know when to be mafid. I think within your own circle, where the mission statement is to be a Torah community, you have to be machbid, and you have to know when you don't have to, that you're not calling the shots, and that's for the larger Jewish community, where I don't think you have a responsibility to go over the top on these issues, and ultimately you can slowly transform them if they see that you deal with issues with a certain sense of sensitivity. Yes?
You mentioned before, I think the Mishnah Berurah mentioned that hands are one of the things that are a social thing.
I said the Lavush. I don't think it was Mishnah Berurah. I think that
What are the parts of the body?
Oh, the Mishabura. Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the covering of certain areas. He said it depends on.
Depends on like the where you live.
Right.
What other parts of the body can keep in that part, and what are the parts that are?
I think that the sleeves, basically up to here, is a mandatory halakhic requirement, and based on your the community, the where the sleeve goes over here, I think is subjective. I remember when we started the high school, I asked Rabbi Shechter for the dress code for the girls. I made one mistake. I asked him in the room when Mrs. Shechter was there also. So Rabbi Shechter gave one answer, and then Mrs. Shechter amplified the answer. So Rabbi Shechter said, this is the minimum, and then go from here. And Mrs. Shechter said, what are you talking about? You have to go till here. And basically that's where we went anyways. But the bottom line is that's one issue. Regarding skirts, I think it should be minimally up to the knees. I think that your concern sometimes with skirts is that sometimes you can have a skirt that fits the length category, but is so tight that it's inconsistent with the laws of tznius. And pants would be a much better halachic alternative. So I think it's important to define when you define skirts and stuff like that. It needs to be more than just a. It needs to be more than just a length issue, especially. My understanding is that now the materials in which skirts are made from are a little bit more, they're of that nature that they disclose more of the frame of the body, the curves of the body. I think you have to be concerned that they're loose fitting. That's
what about for guys?
I don't think, I'm not aware, I'm not informed about exactly what those are. For me, intuitively, I would assume that a guy has to have some form. I don't know, I'm not 100% sure, so I'm not gonna answer the question. And I would assume that what I would demand is that a guy wears, has some type of shorts, minimally, that has some type of shorts that aren't tight in any way, shape, or form. I'm not sure exactly what the halacha is. I would have to look it up. I don't know. There's a guy here in the community who owns grandmas and stuff like that, Shmuel.
Yeah.
Do you guys know the story of Shmuel?
No.
Shmuel used to model bathing suits on the beaches of Boca after he went through Israeli army. And he had very, very long hair. He had hair very long. He got involved with the Turn Friday Night to Shabbos program. I think the way he heard about it was actually we had these planes that did like these Turn Friday Night to Shabbos over the beaches. He came to a program. He got involved. He eventually we got him involved. We learned with him, things of that nature. He went to YU. I remember Rabbi Chaifetz calling me up because he had long hair and saying, what type of boy did you send us? This would be so much trouble. I explained to Rabbi Chaifetz that there's a lot more challenges of guys in the dormitory than this guy will be. And he got involved with learning. I think for a few years, he then went back to the Baal Tshuva place in Panovich and learned. He actually put out, by the way, one or two svarim on certain issues, one or two pamphlets, halakhic pamphlets. Then I think he was learning here for a while. And then he moved into a more business mode. But he became observant through a Turn Friday Night into Shabbos experience. What jogs my memory is because of the way he was dressed the first time I saw him, which is slightly different than the way he carries himself now. Yes? So you have to look at the Me'iri on the Altar V'Sicha and Misha. That's a good question. I
you know, you call women by their first names, or you call them by, you know, if you call them, you know, Mrs. something. Women that are older than me and things of that nature, I always call by the Mrs. something. Women who are not, I call by their first names for the most part. Women that I am concerned about their own personal demeanor and sneas issues. I mean, I'm not talking about dress. I'm talking about more a mindset. Women that I'm concerned about the mindset, that they just carry themselves in a way that is, that I find myself to be uncomfortable, I will not call them by their first name. And there is, I can't explain that, but you will find there are times that women just, I'm not saying that men don't do it also, they just carry themselves in a way that is just not, they could be wearing the most sneeriest dress in the world with schachas from everybody on the back of the dress. But the bottom line is they can carry themselves in a way that's so unsanua, that's inconsistent with whatever, I will try to create an additional distance. But normally I call women by their first names. Yes?
Is there a difference between going and shaking
hands? I think it's mentioned a few times in the sources. I would assume that based on the concerns that we have, that we should be concerned both about Jews and non-Jews. There are different approaches mentioned within the sources handed here, but I would assume that one should be careful in both cases. I would want to spend a little bit more time researching that. What? So there's a whole question in the sources whether a Nahri, a woman who's, whatever, is she considered like a Nido also? I don't remember how everyone deals with it. Yes?
When you were talking about the dress code for the school, the registrar said it's okay up here.
He said in the conversation, he goes, the minimum is here, and then the subjective piece is over here. The minimum. He didn't say that that's what our dress code should be. We were just discussing what the dress code should be.
How come we never, at least I've never really seen schools always dress code is the covered elbows. That's like the big thing, with the elbows. I mean, if that's all subjective, then why is it so...
Because I think that's important in a day school, especially ones that are co-ed, that you follow the more objective, subjective approaches, because you have a whole bunch of guys walking around with hormones that are out of control. I think it's important that you create sneas that's the best way. I think you can be more lax on sneas issues in a non-co-ed environment than you can in a co-ed environment. Yes?
You spoke about handshaking reform for the normal mode of operation and greeting. What about in places and cultures where the normal mode of greeting is kissing?
I think that we live in a culture now that the normal mode of thing is kissing. I think it is a normal mode now. I think that there are, in business environments and other environments, I see a lot that, you know, that people just kiss all the time. I just think and that's what the struggle I'm trying to communicate here. I think there are certain gestures that need to be limited to one's spouses. And I think that when we cheapen those gestures, we're essentially cheapening certain activities that are limited to between husband and wife. And I think that kissing is one of them. If a woman came over, again, I can count it on one hand with many fingers left over, came over and kissed me, whatever, I wouldn't go, I might turn red because I'm so unused to it, whatever, and I'm comfortable with it, but I wouldn't say anything, she violated my space, or she violated this, or anything like that. But I just don't think, as a matter of course, it's an appropriate thing, and I do think that we live in a culture where you go to a restaurant and you see whatever, and there's a business deal, and they're talking, or there's an interview, and afterwards they might shake their hand, or they might just give each one a kiss on the cheek, and that's true in the Ashkenazi community, it's true in the Sephardic community, I see it all the time. I just think that's a piece that we need to be careful about. Okay. we'll stop here.
Thank you.